This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The governor is pursuing a new pathway for voters to decide the fate of abortion laws in Wisconsin. We have the details on his proposal and the top Republican who signaled support for the idea. Plus, dueling attack ads, the new messages behind a slew of campaign ads hitting the airwaves. And who's taking the lead in key races in Wisconsin? We have data from the latest polling less than 7 weeks before Election Day. All this and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 23rd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we're going to start with this week with one of the key issues in the governor's race, and I would also say U.S. Senate race and many races here in Wisconsin, is the issue of abortion laws here in Wisconsin. Governor Evers is calling for a special session on October 4th, in a sense to kind of find a workaround for voters to alter state laws such as the 1849 criminal abortion ban by proposing a constitutional amendment to allow statewide referendums. Now, like I said, this is kind of a crafting of his sorts to do it and letting the voters decide. Right now, Wisconsin, you can't allow voters to go to referendum to change archaic laws like this one. But, of course, we know this is a key issue. So he's trying to get the headlines of this, that he's trying to do something on it. Of course, we know his record on special sessions is not great. GOP leaders were very swiftly responded and said they're not going to do this, calling it a political stunt. Let's first just hear from Governor Evers, and then we'll kind of talk about where lawsuits stand right now here in Wisconsin against this ban.
The will of the people is the law of the land. Well, right now, today, and when it comes to reproductive freedom, the will of the people isn't the law of the land. But it damn well should be, folks. So I'll be calling the legislature in a special session to take up a constitutional amendment that will enable the people of Wisconsin to go to referendum and repeal our 1849-era criminal abortion ban to ensure women across our state will go back to having the same rights now that they did the day before the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade.
During the governor's press conference, he noted that U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, at one point, because Ron Johnson has flip-flopped kind of on the issue of abortion laws in Wisconsin, at one point he did support the idea of letting individual states, such as Wisconsinites, decide to add exceptions to the 1849 criminal abortion ban. Exceptions such as rape are not included or incest. Right now there is also a lawsuit challenging this by the Evers administration. Attorney General Call is at the forefront of it. And we now know that he's kind of narrowed his decision with the DAs that we talked about last week. He wants to prosecute, file lawsuits against them now instead of GOP leaders. And now that window is kind of closing down of it doesn't seem like we're going to have any action on this issue until right before or right after the election.
So a couple things about the special session call. One, it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. The October 4th, I'll bet you money, it'll take less than 30 seconds to gavel in and out, which is what they've done with numerous other special session calls. The question I've had this week or heard about was, okay, Democrats want to keep abortion in the forefront of voters' minds. Is this the best vehicle to do it? Because the governor has a bully pulpit, right? So is a special session, which we as journalists have become somewhat accustomed to them coming in and out, it's a two-day story, right? The day he called it, the day they gavel it out. Is there a better vehicle to do this? Others say, look, the base needs to know they're still fighting for this issue. Don't let it go away. And you kind of talk to operatives on both sides, and Republicans are feeling more confident that the pendulum on abortion has stopped swinging, that their issues, crime, inflation, are starting to swing it back toward their side. Democrats say no. They're missing. It's not just about the overall numbers you see in the polls. It's about who moves because of this issue. If you move 5%, just pick a number out of thin air, of the college-educated suburban women in Waukesha County, that's a big deal, right? So it's more important about that. So that's going on. Now, beyond that, I haven't heard the interview yet, but apparently Tim Michaels went on Dan O'Donnell's show, sort of talk show host, said that he would sign a bill adding rape and incest exceptions to Wisconsin's 1849 ban. Now, that's noteworthy because you're seeing ads in which Michael's own words being used against him. Michael's did an interview in which he was asked, you support the ban as is with no exceptions, rape or incest. Yes, that's my position, essentially. So it's noteworthy that he's taking that position because he's getting beat up on the issue. It's a vulnerability for him. Also noteworthy, the lawsuit that you mentioned. So Josh Call has filed a motion with the court asking to narrow the window for a response. So in state law, if you're sued, you have a certain amount of time to respond. In this case, it's 40 days, I believe. The DAs were served on Wednesday this week. Do some basic math. That means late October for they even respond. There's no chance of a decision before November 8th. Now, even with the narrower window, which takes it down, I think, to October 11th to have them respond, you're not going to get likely a court decision by the election. However, they're trying to put some juice to this because they're keeping this issue moving and not letting it die down.
And another note on the Michaels kind of changing his stance on the issue, too. We've also seen Ron Johnson kind of flip-flop and be kind of careful of how he's approaching whether he wants to see exceptions to Wisconsin law. He's also supported legislation in Congress for, you know, more of a nationwide abortion ban, and then kind of backed off that a few days. So it seems like Republicans are just being a little bit more careful on this issue. And we know that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has always been open to adding exceptions. So if Michaels were elected, seems like that might be a possibility.
The issue, though, is because there's
a mixed caucus, though.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't know that you'd see Robin Voss get Democrats to help him push a bill that add exceptions. I don't know if Democrats even vote for that kind of bill because it put them on record of being okay with other restrictions. That's a tightrope to walk.
I will say it was probably going to be discussions likely in the Capitol about that. Another event that happened at the Capitol this week is the State of Education speech that happened yesterday with State Superintendent Jill Underley. So she delivered her second State of Education address and kind of took aim at the funding system here in education for schools. And she challenged GOP lawmakers to prioritize the projected more than $5 billion state surplus to help schools. She also, during her speech, kind of took aim at GOP bills that seek to ban the teaching of critical race theory. We know that Republicans have been introducing bills to try and ban that in schools, and the other legislation that would give parents more control over what is taught in their schools, the Parental Bill of Rights. So she kind of attacked those aspects during her speech as well. Let's take a listen from what she had to say, touching on both of those issues, and we'll go from there.
The only way to teach the complete story of the United States is to include the history of racism. After all, the founding of this country included both slavery and democracy. And denying the centrality of slavery and racism just because it's uncomfortable does nothing but endanger the continuation and strength of our democratic society. Grappling with difficult concepts, including discrimination, is essential. It's culturally relevant, and it's accurate teaching. Saying otherwise is problematic and racist. We need more and better school and library funding here in our state. To be clear, the legislature has the financial means to help our public schools. They are simply choosing not to. It's a choice, and while they're able to make that harmful choice, we shouldn't let them. This legislature is sitting on a surplus. Money that we paid as taxpayers, believing that it would be put to good public use. Instead, it just sits there, helping no one, while all our schools face choices between school safety upgrades or teacher pay raises that are unsustainable, by the way, on one-time federal funding, or going to referendum yet again.
So it's worth noting that Governor Tony Evers has vetoed those Republican bills that would, you know, expand school choice, ban CRT, proposals to provide parents more control over their children's education. And that was kind of how Tim Michaels responded to this address, with Dr. Jill Underley kind of talking about those things and saying, you know, she claims that they're not right for schools right now. So in a statement, Tim Michaels said, Tony Evers has been in the driver's seat of education for decades, but students are struggling under his old leadership. Literacy is the foundation of all learning, but instead of making sure that kids can read, Tony Evers and Underley are focused on improving woke politics and gender ideology in the classroom. Also worth noting, this comes weeks after earlier this month. Underly and Evers kind of had a joint press conference in Milwaukee proposing their education budget for the 2023-2025 budget cycle. And of course, none of this will come to fruition unless Governor Evers is reelected. It includes roughly $2 billion in a boost in spending for K through 12 schools. And also, JR, this week we kind of got the grand total of what other state agencies are requesting as well.
So that $2 billion from DPI was the heart of its proposal. The actual proposal that was turned in by Thursday's deadline of last week is $2.5 billion nearly. Agencies overall requesting $3.5 billion in additional GPR, general purpose of revenue, which is the main checkbook for the state, your tax dollars from sales, income, and corporate taxes. So the big picture is Evers had told most agencies, keep your requests flat. They did not do that, which is not a shock. Looking at the requests, there are about a dozen agencies seeking a double-digit increase in general purpose revenue. There are ones like the Elections Commission, for example, seeking that money for a new inspector general. DPI was the big, big chunk of that. In the big context of our finances, we're looking at a surplus of around $5 billion or so if projections hold up. You could fund every single agency request and cut taxes and some money left over before even seeing any revenue growth in the next 2 years. That's not going to happen. This is the same exercise every 2 years where agencies ask for everything they possibly could want, knowing they're going to get cut back. So the more you ask for sometimes, the maybe you get better off in what they give you the bottom line. Republicans, I'll bet you money they're going to hold both houses after November. They're not going to go for $3.5 billion in new GPR, not going to do $2.5 billion for DPI either. The question is, if there's a Governor Evers and Republican legislature, what could they live with each other? And if they send him a budget like this past one with not a whole lot going into education, would you see Evers actually veto a budget? Now, that's way down the road, but that's something to keep in mind, that you might see a guy, Evers, who would be in his second and likely last term. Will he really take a stand after kind of hinting at vetoes of budgets last two cycles, actually do it? If it's Governor Michaels, way different discussion. All that money likely goes toward more of a tax cut package, moving toward a flat tax, maybe doing away with the income tax, rather than going into like boosting state spending.
And sticking on the governor's race is kind of a bridge off to our next story, a story that actually I broke this week. It's about Michaels Corporation, which is, of course, the Brownsville-based construction company that is co-owned by Tim Michaels. Looking through the history of working there, female and minority workers who worked for the construction company in the past were allegedly subjected to sexual abuse, sexual harassment, and racial discrimination. And this is according to federal lawsuits. It's important to note that they span over two decades. There was five lawsuits that I highlighted in my story, and this and Michaels Corporation now employs over 8,000 employees. So when you look at a bigger picture, yes, five out of that many employees over that many years is not a big deal, but this is an election year. People look up what you do and where your finances go. I did speak to a former worker who basically told me, and now all these cases were settled too, either outside of court or with non-disclosure agreements and whatnot. So I did speak to a former worker who couldn't really talk, of course, much about the case, but he said, you know, he didn't blame Tim Michaels for what happened to him. He claims he was racially discriminated against for years while working there, and he said it's not, you know, so much the higher ups, it's who was working on the job site with him. So this kind of blew up in a bigger picture, because now we're seeing ads released by the Democratic Governors Association about this, and then also this week we saw the Republican Governors Association hitting Governor Evers for quote unquote being soft on crime and attacking his parole commission, which Evers doesn't have any oversight over. There is a parole chairman who, you know, grants paroles, and some of those he has to do by laws. So now we're seeing these dueling, very negative attack ads, and both of the candidates are trying to, you know, in a sense, you know, sending out press releases, trying to fact check this. This is not real. This is not really how it happened. And Evers is basically trying to argue that he doesn't have control of who's released on the parole commission. So we often talk about the U.S. Senate race, JR, of getting pretty nasty with those negative ads. And I think we're now kind of turning up the heat here in the governor's race as well.
When you are running for office from the public private sector, your private sector experience becomes basically not just your calling card, but also fair game to look at what happened. And so with Michaels, if you're going to run as a businessman who can solve problems, here's an example of where you had problems with your company. I've often said love stories that we do in the media and the impact we can have, but it's the ads that drive that message. You're seeing the DGA and Evers grab onto this. It's also bolstering that message about Michaels and women, right? So the abortion attacks about his position about abortion, layer this in. The idea is it makes it harder for him to win back those women who might be kind of open to coming back to GOP over crime and inflation, but are kind of like on the fence. Seeing these ads combined with the abortion ones maybe make them go, I'm not ready yet.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to keep talking about these ads. Yeah. But now we're going to shift to the U.S. Senate race, because there's been a lot of talk about endorsements, I will say law enforcement endorsements, but now we're also seeing them in advertisements. First, let's start with what happened earlier this week. I actually will say it probably started last mm-hmm. week, because to start this out, as Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes' campaign released a list of 9 law enforcement endorsements claiming he received his support. Well, since then, 2 names were removed. One individual was a La Crosse County Sheriff Captain John Siegel, who said he never endorsed Barnes. On the other side, there was a Racine County Deputy Sheriff Malik Frazier that, when I was comparing lists, that was the second name. Now, that is a little different scenario, because Malik said he does support Mandela as an individual. Maybe he'll vote for him, is what he told me, but he doesn't want his name on this list. So it didn't look good for the Mandela Barnes campaign to have to, you know, scrub 2 endorsements when we know crime mm-hmm. is a huge issue in this race. So Ron Johnson's campaign was quick to criticize it, said, you know, this is ridiculous. It's absurd that he can't get support from law enforcement when, in fact, those names were removed over the weekend. They were edited. And then the campaign actually added 8 additional law enforcement officials to the list. Days later, Ron Johnson released a list of more than, I think it was 51 to be mm-hmm. exact, calling it a bipartisan coalition. I think there were 2 Democratic sheriffs on there. So they're both trying to tout that, you know, I'm the law enforcement candidate. But we're now seeing this in ads with Ron Johnson attacking Mandela Barnes for, you know, you wanted to defund the police. Now Mandela Barnes is out with an ad saying, I never wanted to do that. I think that was released today. So it's going to be a lot of mixed messaging that we're going to see, especially on this issue.
Pulling back the endorsements, not a great look for a campaign ever. The bigger problem for Mandela Barnes is the spending disparity. Ad Impact tracks ads. They've tracked $49 million being spent by Johnson and pro-Johnson groups in the general election versus $40 million for Barnes and pro-Barnes groups. Now, it's not as huge a disparity as in the governor's race. We'll talk about that later on. The problem for Barnes, though, is Barnes is running against an incumbent in what looks like a good GOP year, maybe neutral to lean GOP. Being outspent by that makes it that much more difficult to beat the incumbent versus Michael is running in maybe a good GOP year, but being outspent by the incumbent, right? The other issue for Barnes is, okay, we have a new ad out today. It started running yesterday with a retired Racine police officer saying Mandela is the real deal, right? Trying to push back on the soft on crime issue. This is the second response ad about crime. The other one had Mandela in the kitchen, you know, unpacking groceries. I don't want to defund the police or abolish ICE. That's a lie. The issue that Democrats talk to me about is, how do you have credibility as a Democrat in a police versus police endorsement race, right? You're always going to be on lower ground versus Republicans. It comes to that kind of an issue. Barnes could be more effective, people tell me. You're talking about crime in a personal way. A very tragic story. His best friend and college roommate was killed in a shooting in Atlanta in 2018. He can talk about crime in an authentic way of like, this has affected my life. You know, I know what it means. I really don't want to see this happen to you. And crime is not just like, you know, muggings and murders. It's also gun violence in schools. Mm-hmm. There's a way to talk about it that can be more effective than what we're seeing right now, according to some Democrats I talked to. The question is, can Barnes find that message that works? Maybe the one he's got up does it. I'm not an ad guy.
Ad expert.
I'm just telling you what I hear from people.
Yeah.
Good news for Barnes is he raised $6.3 million in the month of August alone from ActBlue. Now, that's not including like other checks from people, but just from ActBlue, the online portal the Democrats use for fundraising. He had raised $6.9 million from the day he got into July 20th. So things are going better. But can he get that into a meaningful, effective ad campaign to push back on the Johnson message about, you know, being soft on crime? And, oh, don't forget, Barnes' backers are now talking about they think these ads are racist.
I was just going to mention that. Yeah.
Getting into this, you know, kind of message. It kind of was a quiet rumbling the last couple weeks I've been hearing. Now they went and had a news conference in Milwaukee to push, like, hey, there's something going on here we don't like. I don't know if it's going to break through with people, but it is definitely an issue for Barnes to contend with about how does he look like he's not soft on crime.
And the counter to that press conference that you just mentioned, Ron Johnson is in Milwaukee today with some of the law enforcement officials who endorsed him. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of punches thrown at Mandela there, too. So a lot of dueling ads and dueling press conferences and the same issue that I think is going to only continue to be talked about on the campaign trail because of the extreme rise in violence, especially in the Milwaukee area that we're seeing. We also got some new polling this week that kind of gives us, once again, just a snapshot in time of where the candidates are in these key races. So let's first start with the Emerson polling. Ron Johnson was just slightly ahead of Mandela Barnes. Governor Evers, too, just slightly ahead of Tim Michaels. Also, Spectrum News teamed up with Siena to do a polling. Not that huge of a difference, but I mean, if you just look at the numbers, JR, of course, it is a close race. There's no big surprise there. We live here in Wisconsin, in the battleground state. It's likely going to be very close. These numbers also match up with MU polling. Let's just bring up that slide to show people where those numbers were at. It's almost the MU polling and Spectrum News are very, very similar. Actually, they match up the exact same. And of course, those were Wisconsin voters. So, I mean, no real surprise here, JR. There's not much movement here at all.
No. A couple things to note. One, Marquette will have two more polls out this fall, one October 12th, one the Wednesday before the election, November 2nd, so watch for that. Two, you often see the negatives move for a candidate before the head-to-head. So what I'm watching is, polls are great, I'm a polling geek, but I watch for trends more than like the snapshots because they all do it differently. There are nuances in how they do things. So I want to see the Marquette poll, for example, how has the trend progressed through the fall? Do we see the Michaels negatives and the Barnes negatives continue to climb? If those negatives continue to climb, you'll see that start to impact the head-to-head most likely. So that's something to keep in mind going forward.
All right, let's move on to stock picks. And we did touch on this a little bit earlier, but rising you have for the governor's spending, or governor's race, excuse me, the spending.
So Ad Impact, again, love their stuff. They have tracked so far $93 million plus in spending on TV alone in the governor's race in Wisconsin. Now, that's $55 million in the general election. Add in the primary, we've already eclipsed the overall spending, according to the Democracy campaign, from 2018. The big thing about those numbers are, though, is that Evers is outspending Michaels on TV for the general election overall, him and his supporters, 2.3 to 1. Look just from this week through the election day, it is 3 to 1. I talked about this 2 weeks ago, right, that it was a 3 to 1 margin kind of from that point forward. It's not changing. Michaels is not closing the gap. Evers announced this morning he raised $4.5 million in 37 days. Now, I have not seen the report yet. I'm curious to see, for example, how much the state party may have given to Evers. Between January of 21 and mid-July, the state party given him $6.8 million. Evers is up to about $25 million raised overall since January of 21. He is pulling money in a faster clip than Scott Walker was 4 years ago. It's also why he's outspending Michaels on TV. If you look at those numbers just from this week through the election, Evers by himself is outspending the total Michaels and RGA effort by about $3 or $4 million. That is important because candidates get a better rate than groups do on TV buys. I think it's about 30-35% premium. So if I am a group and you are the candidate and you spend $1 million and I spend $1 million, you get basically 30% more value from your dollars than I do because I'm a group, not a candidate. That means Evers has way more points, as you guys call it in the TV business, on the air. So he alone is basically outspending those guys. That is a problem for Michaels. Now, we've talked about this before. He's a billionaire.
Yes.
Asking millionaires for checks. I don't know how it's going. His campaign told me that he raised $500,000 from the event with DeSantis in Green Bay on Sunday. Okay, nice chunk of change, but we'll see on Tuesday at the latest how he's doing overall in that first month after he won the nomination. I'm not expecting a big number. Maybe it'll surprise us because there's not a real feeling of he's putting a lot of money, his own money into the race. And if he's not, how's he close that gap?
Right. And the Democratic Party of Wisconsin has been a fundraising machine since 2018 and before leading up to that election. So they have had a lot of cash on hand waiting and holding on to it, ready to give it to Governor Evers. And that's, like you said, just a bonus for him. Mixed this week is Milwaukee finances. And that's because Mayor Cavalier Johnson submitted his budget proposal specifically for law enforcement. And he got a lot of flack for it, specifically because he's going to invest in the police department, but he has to cut positions because he's basically saying that they're going to have to cut key services because they're in a dire place right now with their city finances.
His budget proposes a $20 million boost in the police alone, but that translates to 17 fewer officers on average over the course of the year because costs keep going up. The reason we're really mixed is it's not great right now. The cliff is coming, though.
Yeah.
So Milwaukee has a pension problem. Of the $311 million property tax levy the city's proposing for this budget under Cavalier Johnson's budget, $100 million would go just toward the pension fund to try and take care of that. The city got $390+ million in ARPA funds from the COVID relief package. That runs out end of 2024. That cliff is in 2025. Without action from the state or something created by the locals, there's going to be real pain in Milwaukee come 2025. Now, Cavalier Johnson has tried very hard to build a relationship with Republican lawmakers, hoping that he can try and, you know, shake some money loose. They've asked for years in Milwaukee for ability to do a local referendum, raising the county sales tax, additional shared revenue. And Republicans had kind of been, we're open to working with these guys, trying to work, we like that. A couple of problems have emerged. One is this effort by nonprofits to turn out the vote in Milwaukee this fall. It's become this kind of like angst among Republicans. Is this the city trying to help these groups? What's going on here? Because Mayor Johnson first went out and said, hey, we're going to promote this and do like this widget on our website to kind of talk about it. Republicans like, wait, this is like Zuckerbucks 2.0. The city says, we're not paying for anything. We're not doing anything. We're just, those guys are doing it, but they're open records requests for documents. It's caused some angst, right? So there's that issue. I don't know that the city can get Republicans on board to approve raising local sales tax to give them more shared revenue. The one piece of leverage that the city has is the 2024 National Convention, right?
Very true.
We're putting this thing on.
Yeah.
You know, you guys got to help us a little bit. We shall see. But things aren't great right now, but they can get way worse in a few years unless there's some changes.
All right, and we got a few minutes left. Dave Eastman is falling this week.
So he's a candidate for Senate in Western Wisconsin, taking on Dem Jeff Smith. Estenson was a police officer 20 years ago, a couple of smaller communities out in Western Wisconsin. He was investigated by the Department of Justice for allegations of inappropriate relationships with women while he was on duty. Also, the suggestions that he had kind of maybe suggested sexual favors in exchange for letting somebody off of a drinking ticket, things like that. Not great stuff if you're trying to beat an incumbent in a district that leans Democratic but is in an area of the state where in an off year can go pretty Trumpy, right? The challenge for Democrats is there's also the state where this district runs from La Crosse in the south, just north of there, up to St. Croix County's line, basically the exurbs of Minneapolis, St. Paul, over by Eau Claire. There's not a dominant media market there. You're not going to see the newspapers maybe get onto this story. I think I saw the Trempealeau Times write about it, but not really anybody else. So how do you make it break through? Well, paid media is how you do that. Democrats have to find a way to put this into the conversation via paid media because you're in above a media bubble over there. And it's a challenging prospect because you have a dominant TV or radio station up
right
there.
Mm-hmm.
It spreads that kind of that whole area. So I don't know, it's a killer for his campaign. And Republicans looked at this like, hey, this race is doable. You know, we've got a guy in Jeff Smith who has voted fairly liberally over the course of his time, his first term in the state Senate, had been in the assembly before, maybe not a great fit for the district in that way. So we'll see how that plays out when the investments are made this fall and push comes to shove for the key races in the legislature.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Have a great weekend.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.